You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. HuntStand is the most popular and functional mobile hunting app on the market. With a variety of base maps to choose from, satellite imagery that is updated every month, the ability to check the weather, know property information, and even catalog your trail cam pics, HuntStand even gives you the ability to import pins and location markers from other mobile apps. Visit HuntStand.com or download wherever you download your apps. Enter discount code SN20 at checkout for 20% off.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today, I've got a very special guest. His name is Brandon Adams. And Brandon, he's kind of a legend in his own right because he has done something that nobody in Oklahoma has ever done before. And in fact, I don't believe they've done since. I'm not going to spoil what that is, but I'm going to let him talk about that here in just a minute. This is going to be an awesome episode, though, because he in Oklahoma, I mean, people don't really think of Oklahoma as an amazing hunting state or like a awesome big game state, but they have so many cool opportunities there that Brandon is going to dive into with us on this episode of the podcast, and I'm super pumped about it. So instead of me continuing to ramble, let's just jump into this one. Here we go.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life.
I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys, so I am constantly getting asked about the gear that I'm using, and the great news is that I've got it all listed out on Go Wild. Now, if you listen carefully, I'm going to tell you how you can get a $10 gift card to use toward picking up some new gear. Go Wild is a free social community where your photos aren't censored, they're actually encouraged. So much so that Go Wild will give you points for things like sharing your trophies, gear reviews, and inviting friends. Now, as you earn those points, you can unlock awesome rewards like gift cards and free swag, knives, huge discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex, and so much more. Also, check this out. If you create a free account, you can unlock $10 just for trying it out. So go visit downloadgowild.com to get started. All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is Brandon Adams. Now, he's actually in my neighboring state, which I love getting to talk to people that close to home. But Brandon, I know life's busy because you're not only in the outdoor industry, but you've got a lot of other things going on. So thanks for taking the time to hop on the show with me.
No, I appreciate the invitation, and I look forward to talking some outdoors. It's definitely a nice break from living the outdoor life as far as editing and production work. You know, I like to take a break and talk about outdoors. You know, yeah. I love this stuff.
So. Man, and that's what I try to tell people when they talk about getting into the outdoor industry. Like, fortunately for me, I get to do a lot of talking. You know, I mean, with podcasting, it's just talking and hearing stories, which I could do all day, every day. But in addition to that, I get to go out and actually do some hunting. But I feel like with any job, once you do it over and over and over, it's kind of like, oh man, I've got to do it again. I've got to do it again. I never feel that way about actually hunting, but then creating the content during or after, it can get monotonous still.
Well, I've been in the hunting industry since 06, and the trips, like being away from family, that can get pretty monotonous for sure, you know, because, you know, my family, I got two little girls, 14 and 11, and, you know, I happen to like both of them, and I happen to like my wife too. And, you know, so being gone 7, 10, 15 days at a time, sometimes even more, you know, that's not always fun. Or, you know, being gone 18 days and then coming home, and then 2 days later, you got to leave for another, you know, 7-day trip. And, you know, that stuff definitely can get tiring and whatnot. But of course, it always seems like once you're in the field and the sun's coming up and, you know, you're actually in the moment, things tend to work themselves out. But it's kind of like, it's like this is a decent way of looking at it. I'm not afraid of heights whatsoever. Okay. But I'm afraid of the thought of heights. Okay. Yep. So I could be laying in bed. Oh, you know, them videos like on YouTube and Instagram where like people have that, like a POV camera, real wide angle, and yep. they're like running along a cliff edge or riding a bike along, you know, a razorback or something.
Yeah.
That freaks me out. Like the thought of it freaks me out. Like I'll be laying in bed and get like scared in bed thinking about that. But when I'm on the, when I'm on an actual mountain, on some rim rock overlooking a 600 foot drop, I'm the person that's leaning over looking down, you know. That's kind of the same thing with these hunting trips, is like I dread actually leaving my family. But then whenever I'm, you know, in motion, it all seems like that's where, you know, not that where I'm supposed to be, but like, you know, I definitely feel in my element. So
yeah, man, that's really interesting, because I feel like I'm almost the opposite in both. When I see those videos, I'm like, holy cow, that's insane. I don't necessarily get scared. I'm like, man, those guys are idiots. I would never do that. But it's not like a fear that comes over me. When I'm out there, I don't go anywhere near it. I'm like, right. Dude, I'm like, you guys do it. Even, well, actually, sometimes my buddies will get out and they'll like sit on the edge, dangle their feet off, and I'm like, nope. I think you're an idiot. I think you should back away. But then also with hunting and leaving for trips, I am super excited about the trip. Like looking forward to elk season every year. I'm like, man, I can't wait to get out there. Leading up to it, there's those, there's like the excitement. I'm not necessarily thinking about, man, I'm going to miss my family. But as soon as I'm away, like that first night where I'm sleeping away from home, I'm like, dang, I really miss them. Like,
right.
I can't wait to be back. So it's kind of like the same, we're experiencing the same thing, but in a different order.
Yeah. There's probably some like Freudian reasoning for that, like some hardwiring stuff.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, that is the exact opposite of me for sure.
You're kind of in and out of things all the time. Like you said, you might be gone for a couple weeks, be back for 2 days, be gone again. How many states are you traveling to each year?
Oh man. Probably on average 6 to 7 states, 8 states for like just normal big game stuff, elk, whitetail, and mule deer. This year I got a huge schedule. I actually have canceled 5 different turkey hunts, out of state turkey hunts, because jeez. Of my big game schedule is so significant. I value my marriage. So <Yeah. laughs> I want to pick and choose the days that I'm gone carefully. And so I canceled the turkey hunts to go on the big game stuff. Like we're going, well, first of all, I'm going to Mexico like in a week for a turkey hunt. And I'm going there because the guys, he has a coos operation as well. And I want to kind of rub elbows and see if I can get me a coos hunt lined up. Yeah. I'm doing this deal in Texas where I'm killing 6 big game animals in Texas. All hopefully, knock on wood, killing 6 game animals there. And then I got South Africa, which is a freaking dream of mine. So, I got dang. That. And then of course I'm going to Hawaii in July and hunting axis and sheep. So.
Oh my goodness. That's one of the things that I'm going to dive into, is finding more of these tropical hunting opportunities, because my wife loves the beach. And I think right. I could get away with a lot more trips if she was in tow and just got to hang out in a lawn chair on the beach, like the whole time I'm hunting. I don't think 100%. She probably wouldn't think about me a single time. She'd be making TikToks with her feet in the water and I wouldn't even be on her mind. So
see, that's being strategic about it, man. You gotta do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I talked to a guy the other day actually about spear fishing, and I was like, dude, that's a perfect thing to get into. I've never done it. I really want to. I'm really excited, especially after talking to him. But I was like, man, I'm gonna be in the water, which means my wife can be close to the water. And it's a win-win. When I go to Colorado in the winter, she's not a fan at all. So,
right. Well, really, you're doing her a favor if you take her to the beach and hunt. So,
yeah, Exactly. I'm looking out for her. I'm just hunting as a bonus. Right. She actually, I'm taking her there. That's the main part of the.
It's not even a bonus. Like it's you know, you will do your time, if you will, and make the sacrifice to take her to the beach. And, you know, and while you're taking her to the beach, you're going to give her a little alone time because she needs to relax, you know?
Yeah. I'm biting the bullet so that my wife can relax and enjoy herself.
It's really courageous of you to do that. And
thank you.
Self-sacrifice.
Man, on that note, the guys that I elk hunt with, I go out to Colorado for rifle season every year, hoping to switch things up soon. I don't think I'll ever step away from that season just because I love the camaraderie and hanging out with those guys. But I really want to start archery hunting. Out west. That's something I have yet to do. But the guys that I go with, it's funny because their wives have formed a support group of sorts, and they all get together like a couple nights while we're gone for that 9-day hunt. They'll get together and all hang out and watch a movie or cook or bake or something. And I'm like, man, that's good. I feel like we need to just start an emotional support page or group just for our wives for when we're on all these trips.
Yes, that's a big 10-4. I'm gone from my wife about 100 days a year. So she's a single mom for about a third of the year. So she definitely could actually use a support group.
Yeah. I've got a lot of friends actually in the industry that do videography or photography, and they're in the same boat. They're like, man, you know, I'm gone a lot. The nice thing is I get to be home. Like when I'm home, they've got editing and stuff to do, but it's not like they're having to leave the house to go to their job when they're actually around. But when they're gone, they're fully gone, like completely out of pocket, sometimes in the middle of nowhere, no service. And I feel like that'd be a little more tough. Like right now I do pretty simple hunts where I can get a hold of my wife, where I can, get to service easily, you know, get up to the top of a mountain on a four-wheeler and call or something like that. But being gone that many days and not having any contact during the time or during most of it would be really difficult.
Yeah. Most of the places that I go and have gone in the past, most of them have had, you know, some type of cell phone service. Of course, there's been several trips where there's none, you know. I remember the first time I went to Canada, we had I'm the only one that had cell phone service, and we use my phone, and I get back and there's like a $600 phone bill, you know, from, cause everyone else is using my phone too, to call their family. But then the next time we went, I was like, I ain't doing that again. That was dumb. And so, you know, that was like a 15-day trip with no communication. Those are tough.
Dang.
Those are real tough because like I said earlier, I happen to enjoy my family. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. I mean, I'm excited for my kids to get into hunting, to get into the outdoors. Like we go camping all the time together. We go float the rivers, but once they're actually old enough to enjoy camping or like put the miles in, I think it's going to be a lot of fun because my wife is slowly getting into it. She's not 100%, but she's killed her first deer now. So I feel like that's at least a start.
Right.
Being over in Oklahoma, I mean, I know you travel all the time, but there are a ton of opportunities for hunting in Oklahoma. And would you mind sharing with the listeners a little bit about your accomplishment killing the 5 big game animals and explain kind of how that went down?
Yeah, so Oklahoma is an extremely diverse state. I mean, it's kind of overlooked, you know, because most people don't even think about Oklahoma, because why would you think of Oklahoma in your everyday life? But like from the southeastern part of the state to the tip of the panhandle is about as wide as variety of terrain and vegetation as you can imagine. Down in southeastern Oklahoma, we got these big mountains, the Washita Mountains, that, you know, have 3,000 foot peaks, like, you know, from the bottom to the top, you know, 2,500 to 3,000 foot. Like, you know, you feel like you're in Colorado or New Mexico, something like Montana. You feel like that. They're pine covered mountains and it's just beautiful. And then, you know, as you travel across the state and traverse, you know, the width of the state, it turns into like where I live, right in the middle of the state, where the cross timbers, this is a type of ecosystem where the big timber meets the Great Plains. And you just go a little bit further west of like Oklahoma City, which is right in the middle of the state, you know, it starts turning into the plains, where that's what people think of when I think of Oklahoma is, you know, like flat open country. That's really where it starts to happen, is the middle and central part, or the western part of the state. And then you go in the tip of the panhandle, from the middle of the panhandle to the west end of the very tip of the panhandle is the flattest. I've traveled a lot, and it is the flattest stretch of earth I've ever been on for that, for like a 50 mile stretch. Dang. It's like you're on a sea. This is the way I describe it. It's like you're on the ocean, but it's dirt. Everywhere you look is a straight line. Everywhere around you is a straight line. And when you're driving down the road, you can be driving 80 and it, you know, it feels like it doesn't, you don't have any clue how fast you're going. The only indicator you have is the dots on the highway and the power lines, if there happens to be any by you. So, anyway, what that allows, that diverse eco, all those diverse ecosystems allows for a variety of wildlife. And I'm very proud of our state and the ODWC for cultivating a diverse amount of wildlife. And we have 5 big game tags, all over the counter tags in our state. And the species are whitetail mule deer, pronghorn, black bear, and elk. And the black bear are primarily in southeastern and the eastern part of the state. Elk are actually everywhere. Technically, there's actually a statewide season for those, but the biggest population is in southwestern Oklahoma, and actually in the tip of the Panhandle too, has a really healthy population. Mule deer are in the northwestern part of the state. Whitetail obviously are everywhere, and then pronghorn are on the western half of the Panhandle on. And what you were kind of alluding to earlier, back a few years ago, I decided to embark on an adventure. And that was to try to get all 5 of those in one season. And at the time, I didn't know if anyone had ever tagged all 5, you know, in the state. But I was going to try to do it all in one year, all with a bow. And I was very fortunate to basically, you know, pull it off, so to speak. The tricky part of it is scheduling. First of all, is aligning all the access to these properties with these animals. The next tricky part is the logistics of actually getting it done, because you have a very finite amount of time to actually hunt, because all the seasons basically open up on October the 1st, and then the 3 harder ones, which is the bear, elk, and pronghorn, they have a really short window that you can actually even kill one. Their season's short. And then like for black bear, each day that ticks by after October 1st, you know, your chances just go down exponentially, really. And so anyway, I was lucky to tag one on opening day, nice boar, and went from there. I had to wait until elk season started, which was started on like the 5th or 6th, and then I started hunting there and was fortunate to kill a great bull on the 8th. And then straight from there, with elk antlers in the back of my truck, I went all the way up to the tip of the Panhandle and started bow hunting those pronghorns in that open country, and was able to get my pronghorn on the 11th. And then from there, I had 2 left. And then I had about 3 months to get those. So the mule deer and the whitetail. And of course, I've had success with whitetail, and I've had quite a bit of success with mule deer, but I never tried to bow hunt mule deer in Oklahoma. I have, but I've never really, really tried to bow hunt them. It's always been with a rifle, and I've killed, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 with a rifle. But that turned into one of that mule deer hunt turned into one of my better mule deer hunts ever in any state, which was surprising and super cool. And then, you know, I kind of took the whitetail for granted, and kind of got myself in a tough hunt. I was, you know, trying to kill a good deer. All the animals that I killed were really nice animals, and I wanted the whitetail to be a nice one, and passed up some good ones, and then finally got it done on New Year's Day. So which our season runs to January 15th. So I had 2 weeks to spare.
Dang, man, yeah. What an intense year though. And to be able to do it all in your home state, like there's a lot of states out there that offer multiple big game tags. And it, even here in Missouri, they're starting with elk and bear over the past couple of years. But to be able to find all of that stuff right there in your home state is amazing. And like you said, you're not viewed as one of these Western states that have a ton of big game opportunities. It's very overlooked. And I'm sure most hunters in Oklahoma kind of like that instead of having pressure from all the other states. But man, that's an amazing feat. And to do it all with your bow, like, holy cow. Do you know if anybody's been able to accomplish that since you did it?
Well, from my understanding, they went back, ODWC, what I partnered with the Department of Wildlife after I did it, and, you know, kind of let them know what I did, and then got their blessing and their help for a lot of the production aspects, which that film that I put together, it's about a 90-minute film, is one of the highlights of my production career, you know, as far as the story and then putting it all together and just, you know, frankly, the accomplishment. I'm more proud of that than most anything I've ever done. But well, to my knowledge, nobody has ever tagged all five ever, besides myself. They actually made a new category, the state did, called the Oklahoma Slam, and then they have the Super Slam. Well, they have the Grand Slam and then the Super Slam. The Super Slam is all in 1 year, and the Grand Slam is a lifetime accomplishment. And I'm the first one in both categories, and to my knowledge, nobody has done it ever. And then I happen to do it all in 1 year with the bow. So it's going to be
it all on film.
And you got it all on film with great. I mean, talking like I do this for a living. I've been in since 06. And like, I'm talking like all of the kills were like money, you know, like pretty stellar, pretty stellar year. That it's going to be hard for me to. And then, you know, one thing that people don't, you know, I get asked a lot about the Slam, you know, I also had a regular hunting schedule too that year. You know, I went to Colorado and killed a really, really big mule deer, a velvet mule deer in August. And then I killed a real big buck in Missouri in October. The only tag I left on the table that year was in Kentucky. So, you know, I killed seven, and both, you know, both those other two bucks, were with a bow. So I had a really stellar year, that year for sure.
Gosh, man, I've had 1 year that was like, I mean, far beyond anything else that I've ever done. And it was, I got a mule deer tag, and then I had a whitetail tag. Already I was going elk hunting, and I was going to Alaska. And so I was like, all right, number one goal is to shoot a whitetail, a blacktail, and a mule deer all in 1 year. And I was like, man, this is going to be fun. Alaska was my first trip that year. And, I got up there first day, like had a sweet buck that popped out, and my wife and I, we just hiked up into this public land area by ourselves. We started hiking late in the day, and I mean, we were in the heart of grizzly country, like big bear country on Kodiak Island. And yeah, the next morning we woke up right away, spotted a buck. I was happy to take. My wife was already ready to get down off the mountain because of right. the bear encounters that we had. She's like, yeah, I think her exact words were, I'm doing this because I love you, but I am not happy about it. And so ended up getting that, ended up after that coming back to Missouri, shot, I think I got a whitetail with my bow and a whitetail with my rifle. Then I had my Colorado rifle season and shot a buck and a bull on the same day. And so I was like, dude, that's five antlered animals, which is far beyond anything I've ever done before or since. And up until that point, I didn't even have the podcast. So that was just kind of like me wanting to go out and accomplish something. So I was pretty pumped, but unfortunately only one of them was with my bow. And I feel like your street credibility in the hunting world goes way through the roof as soon as you pull out a bow.
It does. I mean, yeah, there is a certain, you know, it's harder. I mean, for a good reason why it's kind of put up on a higher pedestal. It is harder to get a deer within, you know, a comfortable archery range compared to a rifle. No doubt. Your setups can be completely, you know, they have to be completely different with a bow and as opposed to a rifle, or they generally are. I guess sometimes I've killed a lot of deer with a rifle at 20 yards because I've been in my bow stands.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, dude, that five bucks in a year, especially if they're, you know, antler deer, heck yeah. You know, that's an incredible year.
Oh man, it was so much fun. And it was one of those things where looking back at it, I'm like, did that really happen? I feel like every one of them was awesome and special in its own way. But looking back, you're like, holy cow, man, what an insane year. And it's almost like when you stack them up back to back to back like that, it almost takes away from it in a sense, because like something about the struggle in your success adds to like the reward you get from it, if that makes sense. And so like, if you go years before getting a buck and then all of a sudden you shoot one, it's like the greatest thing. If you're so used to shooting them year after year, it almost in a sense can become watered down. Not that it does for everybody, but I looked back and I was like, dude, that was the most insane year. And I remember all the details of each one, but I don't know. Part of it was almost taken away because it all happened so fast back to back.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta really take, and I've seen a lot of people get jaded with the whole hunting and traveling and killing, like what you're talking about, for sure. You gotta make sure that you take the moment and appreciate what's in front of you and what you've done, and, you know, not take it for granted, because, you know, any deer could be your last, any moment could be your last, and you don't want to look back and think that, man, I should have done something different, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So over there in Oklahoma, you had mentioned all of these were over the counter tags. So it's not even like you have to draw for each one. You can actually just go pick one up.
Okay. So there is one small caveat. They are all over the counter, so that you can get all five tags, you know, with your phone, you know, on an app.
Dang.
But with the elk, you have to, there is no public land hunting for elk in Oklahoma. So you have to have private access.
Okay.
To hunt elk in the state of Oklahoma. You can draw, fun fact, there is a couple of elk draws in the state. And one of them I put in for every year because it's a lifetime draw. Actually, I think all the elk tags are lifetime draws, but there's a lifetime draw in southwestern Oklahoma in the Wichita National Wildlife Refuge. And I'm pretty sure that the success rate is like 90-something%. I think the shot opportunity is 100%. And actually, when I killed my elk in Oklahoma, I was about a half mile north of this fence. So it's a big 50,000 acre high fence wildlife refuge. And these elk have leaked out over the years. And I was about a half mile from that on the open side. So, I've been on a lot of elk hunts, and that elk hunt I got into down there was as good as any. I mean, it was probably the best elk hunt I've ever been in. Like, you know, it's gotta be. I'm talking about New Mexico, Colorado, you know, all these places that I've been, it's up there, you know, it was incredible. So if you get the right piece in Oklahoma, it can be pretty special.
Yeah, that's
but you
awesome.
Can hunt. You can hunt the other four. You can hunt all four of the other four on public. So,
dang, do you know how much of it is over the counter for non-residents, or are some of those hunts off limits, or only for residents?
Oh no, they're all available for non-residents.
Dang.
I mean, I'm not exactly for sure on how much the non-resident tags cost, but like, you know, it's definitely available for anyone.
All right, guys, I need to take a quick second to tell you about a product that I've been using for quite a while now. It's called Bull Elk Beard Oil. If you've spent any amount of time in the outdoors, whether it's on the mountain, in the marsh, or in the woods, you've felt the effects of the wind, the sun, and the cold on your face. What this product does, it helps you look better, feel more confident, and it helps your beard keep its moisture. Not to mention, it smells great, so now my wife can't complain as much after I come home from a long week of elk hunting. Now I need to tell you, I've gotten to know Brian, the founder, over the past couple months, and he is an awesome guy. Brian made sure that all of these oils are made out of clean products right here in the USA. He also loves to give back to the outdoor community, whether that's through fundraisers for public land acquisitions, or even helping donate money to cover the surgery cost of duck dogs. He's an amazing guy, and he makes an amazing product. So go check out bullelkbeardoil.com, and be sure to check out the subscription options so that you don't have to run out of your favorite facial hair product. Plus, you can use the code NOMADIC and get 20% off your order. Man, I'm going to plan this out, and me and you are going to be like blood brothers after this, but I'm going to plan it out to where I'm the first non-resident to ever complete it all in one season.
Dude, you can be the first non-resident, and you'd be the second person to ever do it, so make it happen. I've had a lot of people that have, it's crazy to say, but have been inspired by my story and have tried to do it, and, you know, it's hard. And
oh, yeah.
I absolutely root for everyone. I want someone to go out there and kill all five of them in a week, and all of them bigger than mine. You know, I want everyone to try it. I want you to come down and try it. I want everyone that's listening right now to come down and try it. I love sharing the outdoors, and I'm proud of my state, and I want people to come down here and experience it.
Man, that's really cool. And the nice thing is, you know, there's always going to be bigger animals that are taken. Like every record will be broken at some point, but to know that you are the first, like, that's cool. That can't ever change. Like, you'll always be the first to have accomplished it. So, Man, I just can't imagine. Like, I put in here in Missouri, we don't have over the counter tags yet for elk and bear. And even just drawing one of them would be unbelievable. It's like, I'm not a superstitious person. I don't think that I'm super lucky. I don't really buy lottery tickets, but every time I put in for tags anywhere, I've got such high and unrealistic hopes that I'm going to be the one drawn, and I get let down almost every time.
Yep.
So you said you've got lots of trips this year, South Africa being one of them. What are you going for there in South Africa?
A lot. Not really. I'm actually not going for a lot. Me and my partner in My World Outdoors is going, and then actually a buddy of ours. We're going for plains game, really. That's what I'm after. My number one thing that I'm after is a kudu. And most of the things that I'm going after, I'm focusing with a bow. First of all, I am not a bow snob, just for the record, but when I think about going on trips and planning a trip, I always, like, my brain just naturally goes to bow hunting. And on this one in particular, it's the same way. I'm really after a kudu with my bow, a Gemsbok. I want a blue wildebeest, a few Impala, or two Impala for sure. And then, you know, whatever else tickles my fancy while I'm there. And then, of course, JC and I will be filming each other. And so, I'm sure, I know he's after like 10 or 12 animals. So it'll be a fun action-packed trip for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, man, going to South Africa would be a wild ride. And the array of animals that they have there is unbelievable. Like, hearing about people going and hunting and shooting 50 to 100 species, like, people actually do that. 100 different species. And it blows my
crazy
mind. I can't imagine. And what's also crazy is, like, Texas, they're starting to have basically African safaris in Texas.
Right.
And from what I understand is you can actually spend more money doing it in Texas than going over to Africa and doing it. Obviously it's closer to home, but, you know, to have a premium hunt club that you're going and chasing after, like, a giraffe or a water buffalo, that's a whole different level of wildlife management. What are you most looking forward to? I know you said kudu. Is there something about Africa that you've always dreamed of? Like, do you want to see a certain animal other than the ones you're hunting while you're over there?
No, I don't have a desire to see a specific animal. I think that Africa, you know, as far as American hunters, we talked about putting bow hunting up on a pedestal. Africa's up on a pedestal. You know, it goes all the way back to the turn of the century, the turn of the 20th century, when people are like, I'm going to blank on all the actual names, but like people like TR, like Teddy Roosevelt, that would go over there and tell his stories from there. There was who was the famous writer? Oh gosh, he was kind of full of himself. Leopold is a great one, but I'm thinking of a specific, I cannot believe I'm blanking on his name. Anyway, the point is it's been romanticized for 100+ years as far as being a destination for big game hunters. And I think that maybe that's part of the allure to me is to kind of be a part of that. I definitely want to go twice. So I'm going this time for these plains animals that I mentioned, you know, a handful of them. The next time I go, I want to go after maybe something else, you know, like probably I want to kill. I don't have a huge desire to kill like the big five, you know, like some people do, but I want to go after a cape at least once. And, it's not going to be on this trip, but you know, sometime I want to go after a cape buffalo and, experience that adventure.
Would you do that with your bow or a rifle?
My brain is telling me a bow, but but I don't know what I would do. You know, and frankly, when I go to Africa this time, my brain's gonna be telling me with a bow when we're sitting over these water holes. But you know, I'm a hunter. Like that's the way I think of myself. And you know, if it's not looking positive with a bow, I'll whip that rifle out and let's go. Let's go drive some roads, you know. Let's go get some camp meat and experience a new experience. So
that sounds like you're just a good old country boy. I've talked to plenty of people that are like, man, it's bow all the way. It's always bow. Like and then people take it a step farther and they just do recurve. I am the guy that also likes to succeed. And so I'm like, man, bow hunting sounds awesome, but I'm going to have a rifle as backup if you know, the season allows for it.
Yeah. If I can do it, that's the exact same way I am, man. Like you said, like experiencing, like the experience is what it's about for me. Okay. And that means what you're talking about, people that only bow hunt, people that only recurve hunt, they would say this the exact same thing. But to me, you know, the experience of actually harvesting an animal and then sharing that with people in camp and sharing that with your family, that's all part of the exact same experience to me. And, you know, whether I get to, you know, let's just say there's steps. So step one, two, and three, and the kill itself, as they say, step four, whether I get to step four with a bow or with a gun, now I can go to step five, six, and seven. And I don't know, that to me, that's a part of the whole experience. And so I don't mind shooting with a gun. I don't mind doing what it takes to have a successful hunt. So I'm a guy, like if the power went out tomorrow, you'd want me in camp, because I'm going to come back with meat, you know. Yeah. I would be the village hunter.
Dude, there's times where I almost fantasize about that, where it's like, man, you know, everybody talks about the zombie apocalypse, the end of the world, and I'm thinking, if I was one of the last people here, it would be so much fun. Like, I'd be hunting all the time. I'd be eating great. I'd be going to all these states where, you know, I've always wanted to hunt or experience things. And you know, the pack out might be worse if all my buddies are gone, but the amount of opportunities, even just like here in the city, I'm like, dude, I know of a park right now that I could go kill a slob this fall. And if the end of the world came and there weren't any rules, I'd be over there.
Yeah, I don't have fantasies of the zombie apocalypse like you, but I can relate to that feeling.
Gosh. It'd be fun, but obviously I would miss.
But you know, here's the thing though. Like if you don't need a pack out, where are you packing out to? You know, if you're up in the mountains and you're killing elk, like, that's where you're at for a while.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I feel, I mean, in my mind, I've got like this awesome home base and I've got all the weapons that I've ever wanted and a bunch of cool vehicles. But, you know, in all reality, it would probably be a struggle and I'd be withering away slowly. Hopefully not. And hopefully
you'd be one of those guys on a loan that just, you know, that tapped out, like, or not tapped out, but I got medded out, you know, because they're too light.
Yeah, I'm like, no, let me stay out here. And they're like, no, dude, you've lost too much weight. And
you've lost 40 pounds in 10 days. You gotta go.
My wife would love that right now. I am slowly, not even slowly anymore. I'm just getting a dad bod. And I think she'd love for me to go on a loan, lose weight real fast.
Yeah, dude, you just got to run. You just got to run and eat less. You know, that just solved your problem.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like just not being lazy and eating junk food would definitely do it. So you've got a dream hunt coming up. Is that like your number one bucket list hunt and destination? Or is there something ahead that you still really want to experience?
Alaska. I definitely want to experience Alaska. In particular, two things in Alaska, and that's the moose and the caribou. Caribou is actually, fun fact, is probably on ahead of moose for me as far as I want to see the migration is what I want to see.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if I'll ever see it, but that's what I want to see. I want to be on those plains and that tundra. While, you know, I can see hundreds of thousands of animals, that right there has been romanticized as well. And I don't know if that's even a thing anymore, because I know the caribou populations are so much lower than they were even 30 years ago, 20 years ago. But that is definitely number one on my list. And of course, a moose is high up there too. those two are number one and two. And then Africa is right there. So,
man, that's been my number one for a long time, is moose with a bow in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And I feel like doing a fly-in, float-out hunt would be so awesome, like just cruising the rivers. But again, I look at that and I'm like, dude, I would have to take a long time. Like, I would not want to cut it short. I wouldn't want to be out there for, you know, 9 days and realize, dude, I wish I had another nine. It would be a multi-week trip. But I want to go up there and just shed hunt, too. I've been seeing pictures of people and hearing about, like you said, the great caribou migration. Well, that's so many antlers that hit the ground in the same area around the same time. And I've heard stories of people flying planes, like bush planes, over, and you can see thousands and thousands of caribou sheds from the air that just go back into the dirt, like after a couple of years. Or I want to go and just pick up like 100 of them and have the biggest shipping bill ever to get them all back to my house.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan, sir. I don't know what the legality of that is, but I am supporting you in this decision.
Dude, it'd be a lot of fun. What have you thought in detail about what type of hunt you want to do, like for caribou? Would you do a fly in and then fly out, or horseback in, or what are you looking at?
Yeah, it'll be a float plane trip. I have one in particular already kind of halfway planned. My dad, one of his old army buddies, lives in Alaska, and he kind of's been wanting to do something for a long time. And basically, I'll tell you the strategy. It'll be early season. It'll be before the migration, so we wouldn't actually see the migration on my first trip. But it would be a good way to kill a really big bull, because what we'll do is, early season, like in particular in August, late August and early September, these moose are homebodies. You know, they're like whitetail. You know, they kind of stay in a core area and they don't move a lot. So what we do is we fly out, and I don't want to give the, we'll fly out of Kotzebue, up north, way up north by the Bering Strait, and then go and locate a bull that we want to shoot from the air. And then the idea is to land within a mile of wherever we spotted them, set up camp. You got to wait 24 hours after you fly to before you can hunt, but spot one that we want to go after, set up camp within a mile, and then wait our 24 hours and then go. And then he said that basically if they're in a certain thicket, they'll be in that thicket tomorrow. They don't move a lot and, you know, attack it that way. So that's the plan for my first trip. And then he said there's a lot of resident caribou that are still there on that particular, where we're going to go in that particular area. So we'll still have a chance at caribou. But the main focus of the trip will be moose. So
dang. Yeah. I'm jealous. I hope you have the time of your life and to get up there and actually chase. Like, are they officially the biggest? I mean, they're the biggest land animal in North America, as far as herbivores go, but is there any deer species bigger than that?
No, moose is the biggest current deer alive. Yeah.
Dang. I didn't know if there was like, even like how big are kudu in comparison to moose?
I think kudu is more like an elk size, maybe even a little bit smaller.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think that their elk would be the comparable species for them.
Okay. So. Man, that they're a lot of fun. Like moose.
Yeah. Moose are, have you ever seen a moose?
Yeah. I got to join my buddy on a moose hunt in Colorado. He's the luckiest guy I know. He drew a mountain goat tag and a moose tag, one season in between those two. So it was like 1 year, a year off, got the mountain goat the next year. And dude, we got into moose. We were taking freaking selfies with moose in July when we were scouting this drainage, and they are the coolest thing. And then he ended up getting one opening day and it was a tank.
That's awesome. Dude, they're like dinosaurs. They're freaking, a different thing. Like whenever you actually see one in person, you're like, that is not what I imagined. That's crazy.
Oh yeah. And so, I always tell people, I'm like, I feel like God really had a sense of humor in creating the moose, like one, the way it looks, but then the noise that it makes. You see an elk and you hear it just scream out there in the mountains, just bugling, and it'll make the hair on your neck stand up. And then you have a moose and it makes the dumbest sound ever. And for an animal that size, I feel like it could blow you away with its mating call. And instead it's just like, whoa.
Yeah. That's funny. That's a good point.
Yeah. I don't know. My brain always goes to weird places when I think of animals and the sounds that they make. And I don't know. I feel like my thought process gets away from me in a hurry.
Yeah. That's funny. Well, I mean, it makes sense that you would think that a moose would have a deserving voice just to go along with its, you know, stature. So that makes sense.
Yeah, I feel like it would be intimidating, you know, like it could just do some amazing call and scare away a wolf or a grizzly bear. Or, you know, when they go to challenge each other, it's like the toughest, like the most manly two dudes yelling at each other before a UFC fight. And instead, it's the complete opposite.
Anticlimactic.
Yeah. But man, I appreciate you hopping on the call with me today, man. It's been a lot of fun. I know you've got a busy schedule, I've got a busy schedule, and so I won't take up a ton of your time. But before we hop off the call, would you mind sharing with everyone where they can go and find the work that you do, follow along with you, see that video, that 90-minute video of you killing all big five animals, things like that?
Yeah. So like personally, I'm real active on Instagram. So if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's _BA_Adams. You can search Brandon Adams. I'm sure it'll pop up somewhere. Cause it's not a very common name. So I'm sure I'll be top of the list.
Yeah.
My entity that I own with my buddy, John Christopher, is called My World Outdoors. And, you can hit us up on all the normal social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, and then YouTube is the main place. I mean, Facebook videos have been phenomenal for us. And it's actually one of our key drivers as far as digital, like viewership. It's incredible. Facebook basically has, it's like YouTube, but it's on Facebook. But anyway, if you want to check out the Slammed film, it's called Slammed. And, you can check it out on YouTube. You could just probably type in Brandon Adams Slammed or Brandon Adams My World Outdoors and it'll pop up. So there's a ton of other content. I mean, a ton of content. We put a bunch of stuff out there, and you know, if I do say so myself, I think it's good. So definitely hit us up and subscribe on YouTube if you can. And yeah, man, I'm actually doing, I mentioned earlier, Texas, how I'm doing six species in Texas. I'm doing another slam film in Texas.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And that'll start in June. So I'm looking forward to doing that and making another film and getting the state of Texas, instead of contacting the state afterwards, like I did in Oklahoma, I contacted Texas beforehand and they're all about it. They're all for, they're going to help me with the, all kinds of aspects of the production. So really looking forward to seeing that come to fruition. And hopefully we can have a fraction of the success that I did in Oklahoma. So,
man, that'd be cool. What species are the six that you're going after there? Is it like a true Texas slam? I know they've got all kinds of non-natives now, but do they have their own like native species slam that you're doing?
Yeah. So Texas actually has their own like already recognized slam, and they only have three big game animals that are over the counter.
Okay.
Which is another aspect where Oklahoma is far superior than Texas for all those Texas people listening. No,
you're losing followers for me, man.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, they can unfollow me. It's fine. they have whitetail, mule deer, and pronghorn are the three over the counter tags. And then also included in their slam are those three, plus the javelina. And so
nice.
I'm doing those four. Plus I figured, and like you said, they have a huge list of non-natives that you could technically go after. So you kind of got to draw the line somewhere. So I picked a couple other animals that kind of encapsulates what I think of when I think of Texas. And one is an axis deer and the other is an audat. And so I'm doing those six animals in Texas this fall. Well, I say this fall, like I said, I'm starting in June. So it's going to be kind of a year, all year thing.
Dang. Yeah. Texas. I've been there more this year than I've ever been in my life. And seeing the amount of opportunities they have, like you said, there's a ton of non-natives, but even the native species. And then like people think of high fence everywhere. Well, there's also public land where you could potentially go and shoot. I haven't confirmed this yet, but somebody told me that because elk are non-native, there's not actually seasons or bag limits for them.
That is correct. You can do it year round. I can go kill an elk right now if I wanted to.
That is so crazy. Like, I feel like that is one of the animals that, you know, historically had a home range inside of Texas. And so although they've been gone for a long time, now that they're coming back, there needs to be more regulation. And I know I'm going to lose a lot of followers as Texans go.
Okay. So here, I thought about including elk in my Texas slam, and for good reason, like what you just said, they've been extirpated, you know, based off of, you know, human intervention. Jesus. Sorry. But the reason why I didn't is because, how do I say this diplomatically, frankly, it just costs too much. You can't find anywhere in Texas where, you know, there it's less than $15,000 for now. And I ain't got no money, you know, I ain't got that kind of money where I could pay $15,000 for an elk. And so, that's why I didn't include it, to be honest. And there's no trades, like, you know, in the Oklahoma deal, I did a trade, or I tried to do a trade, and actually the landowner was all about what I was doing, so he kind of just let me go out there for free. I lucked into that deal. It was a lot of work, you know, which a lot of lucky situations are like that, you know, where you put in a lot of work and get these opportunities to take advantage of the opportunity. That's what happened for the Oklahoma deal. In Texas, nobody, they don't trade, you know, they know what they have, and it's a commodity. And so I say all that to say to kind of combat what you were saying, where the state needs to regulate. You know, these landowners are self-regulating their elk herds because it is a commodity for them. And so their herd is going to grow and thrive because that is beneficial to a certain subset of these landowners. So,
yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, they've definitely got a system where it seems like the public, private, and government are all working together and kind of have things figured out to where everyone's happy at this point. And so
yeah,
as much crap as they get for the different things that they allow, all the non-natives that they have, the high fence, like everybody's got an opinion, right? But until you get down there and you actually see it all working cohesively, like it, I feel like you keep your opinion about it to yourself until you've experienced it. Like, don't knock it until you try it, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, all pretty much all of South Africa is high fence. You know, the place that we're going, I think, is 100+ thousand acres behind a fence. I've filmed in Texas many times, low and high fence. And I've never filmed on a small high fence, but like I filmed on a 10,000 acre high fence before in South Texas. And dude, there's no difference in the 10,000 acre high fence and the wild. You know, the only difference is that those deer, you know, and then I about said those deer can't get out, but they can. We've watched them jump the fence. I mean, they literally can jump the fence. It just discourages them from doing so. But when you're in there in 10,000 acres, I mean, how many square miles is that? I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of land. And like you said, if people have never experienced any of these, I'll give you a good example. I'm from Central Oklahoma. Just down the road from me, a buddy of mine owned, it was 180 acres of high fence. Okay. That was behind a fence and he had a lot of deer on that. Yeah. It was basically a wild herd. Nothing like, you know, freaky big or nothing crazy. But they had this one deer that was like 180 inch deer. They knew he was there cause they had all kinds of pictures of him, obviously, cause there was only a few places on that 180 acres they could eat. Well, they hunted that deer for 2 years, like hard, and never seen the deer on the hoof.
Dang.
You know, it's 180 acres of, or maybe it was a little more than a quarter of high fence, mostly wooded, and they never seen the deer, you know? And so it's not a guarantee just because you're behind a fence that you're going to kill a monster.
Well, and that's what people think. They think high fence means, you know, you can go out there with corn in the palm of your hand and the deer are going to come and eat from it. There are a lot of places that are way more wild that are high fence than what your, you know, back 40 is.
Especially in Texas.
Especially in Texas. And I've got a couple friends now that guide down there on big ranches. And they're like, dude, I could take you out for 3 weeks straight and you would never see any one of the fences. And we'd be in different areas every day. And then the other thing that they had mentioned to me is not only is it one helping the animals, you know, not get out and create other non-native herds outside of the fence, it's also keeping certain animals from getting in. Like my buddy, his grandpa, he just passed, but he had 4,500 acres down there. They didn't have pigs on his property anywhere.
Yeah, and pigs is the big one.
Yeah. And he's like, dude, just the fact, if it was only for keeping pigs out, everybody would still high fence because they cause so much damage. And if you can prevent them from getting into your property, it's totally worth it.
That is correct.
So lots of information on Texas there at the end, but Oklahoma is awesome.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. We love Oklahoma too. And Missouri. Yeah. Missouri's great
too. Yeah. Missouri's good too, man. Yeah. Where are you at in Oklahoma? Are you east, west?
I'm in central, like just outside Oklahoma City.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's not too bad. Oklahoma is sweet, man. I used to give Oklahoma a hard time because everybody talked about Whataburger, and I went there and I was less than impressed. But other than that, all of my Oklahoma experiences have been great.
Yeah. Is Whataburger, is that an Oklahoma company? I thought it was Texas.
I think it's Texas, but the closest one to us is Oklahoma. So we literally drove, I think it was 3 hours to go get Whataburger. My buddy, actually he was from Texas, and he's like, dude, we got to go get it. And we left it. I think we left after a shift when I was in college at like 11 p.m., drove 3 hours for Whataburger. And I was like, dude, this was not worth the drive at all.
That is classic Harold and Kumar situation you got going on there.
Oh, we've done that one too. Yeah. We drove an hour and a half for White Castle. Didn't like that either. Maybe I just need to quit driving long distances only for food and I won't be.
That is very accurate. Unless it's like an elk that's running around and you can drive a long way for that.
See, if I got to drive somewhere to harvest my own food, it's a whole different story. But to go get a fake, like, microwaved patty, not a fan of that.
Not a fan. I got you.
Well, Brandon, thanks again, man. I really appreciate it. And if you ever are in the Southwest Missouri area, give me a shout and we'll try to set up a hunt or something.
All right, brother. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, man.
Absolutely. And that is going to wrap it up for today's show. Like I told you at the beginning of the episode, like, this is going to be a great episode. And now, if it isn't for you, it definitely is for me. Oklahoma is on my radar as far as states that I need to go and hunt, that I need to start looking at tags in. And who knows? We'll see what this year holds, what next year holds, as far as which states that I'm traveling to. But it's really tough being a podcaster, having all of these amazing guests sharing about their states and the opportunities that they have in each location, and trying to figure out, man, where do I really want to put my time, energy, money into? Because I don't know, there's something about the lower, I'm really the U.S. as a whole, like Hawaii, Alaska, and the lower 48. There's so many opportunities here. And so it would be very difficult for me to branch away from this when there's still so much to experience right here close to home. So I hope you guys are getting out there and enjoying the outdoors, chasing after deer sheds or planting food plots or just gearing up, maybe traveling and doing some hunts. I know my buddy Weston, he just got back from a Canadian black bear hunt, and I'm hoping to have him on the show here shortly to share all about how that went for him. But lots of stuff happening. Oh, and I don't know how this almost slipped my mind. You should be getting your draw results back. I know I'm waiting June 1st. I think some of my draw results come out and I can't wait. I'm already gearing up for elk season. I'm really hoping, I doubt it's going to happen, but I really want to draw one of two moose tags that I put in for this year. Gosh, man, it would be so crazy. But anyways, I'm not getting my hopes up too high. I'm being realistic about it, and that's what I got to keep telling myself. Like, stay grounded. The odds are that you are not going to draw either of them for a lot of years to come. But I'm going to quit rambling. I hope you guys had fun listening to this show. And until next time, always choose adventure and God bless.